I have a suggestion for you. But before I tell you my suggestion, I know you already have a lot of suggestions. In fact, you may have so many suggestions already that you won't be able to find any room in your mind or your heart for the suggestion that I want to make. You and I have plenty of suggestions given to us about our way of being, and about our way of doing, and about our way of having. From our earliest days of life, we were receiving suggestions from our parents and other adults whose presence was with ours. Imagine being born and hearing the words, push, push, push. That word was a suggestion. It was a suggestion to our mothers, but because we could feel everything that they could feel, and we could pick up and process information that everybody was broadcasting in our presence, we would feel the vibration of intensity in the delivery room. 5 years ago, a young man called me for help. He was 54 years old and had multiple sclerosis. He had the feeling that he was so close to discovering the root cause to his illness, and he was searching and searching, and he came across my name on the internet, and he thought, this guy can help me. So he called. As he was talking to me, I interrupted him. Whoa, do you realize you're describing your birth to me? He quickly replied with a deep sadness, oh, I didn't push hard enough. What do you mean? I didn't push hard enough when I was being born. And that has been the story of my life. I didn't push myself to play sports when I was a child. I held myself back. I didn't push myself to be a really good student in school, although I could have been. I held myself back. I didn't push myself in college. Even in my career, I didn't push myself. I could have gone for advanced training, but I held myself back. I just didn't push myself. And now, I have multiple sclerosis, and I still can't push myself. I said, babies being born don't push. They can't push. They have little arms and legs that are like rubber. They get pushed. They are the pushy, not the pusher. You heard somebody thinking or speaking about your mother. That suggestion was not directed at you. Do you think it's possible that you've lived the first 45% of your life obeying that suggestion that didn't even apply to you? Can you see that there might be a connection between believing you didn't push hard enough and multiple sclerosis holding you back? The call ended after a pause, a gulp, a long, and a thank you. I never did know his name, and I never spoke to him again. I don't know what happened with that bit of awareness that he may have gained from that phone call. We get suggestions early, and they don't have to be true to have a dramatic impact on our lives. And we receive suggestions that may be true at the time, right? You've heard this, don't play in traffic, don't talk to strangers. But when we change, as we mature, as circumstances change, those suggestions become untrue. But we can still hold on to the suggestions and live in obedience to them, even though they are now false. Here's a story to illustrate this point. On May 28th, I attended a webinar about using video on the internet for internet marketing. The man leading the call was Don Crowther, spelled C-R-O-W-T-H-E-R, and I really like the way he does stuff. And he told a story. When he was in junior high school, there was a girl with a serious skin condition that was almost like her skin was continually molting and peeling off of her, so it made her really appear ugly. But worse than that, her body put off some sort of smell, awful smell. No matter how frequently she took a shower, how much she washed her hair and washed her body, it didn't make any difference. She still smelled. Now, you can imagine people being what people are. She was taunted and ridiculed unmercifully by other students. Don and some of the other students cooperated and tried to protect her, tried to defend her from the bullying and the taunting and the teasing that went on about her smell. He said that when she would walk down the hallway, people would, like, pretend that they just got overcome by noxious fumes and fall to the ground as if they had fainted because of the air quality that was so awful when she walked by. As it turned out, this girl and Don went to separate high schools. And years later, when he was back in his hometown, he saw her in a store and was amazed at her looks. He introduced himself to her, and she gratefully remembered his protection. And she went on to say that a doctor had discovered a way to cure her condition, and she was now free of it. And Don's eyes had been wide open the whole time, you know, just in amazement, and couldn't resist saying to her, "You are absolutely beautiful," which was stunning to him how gorgeous she was. But the girl burst into tears, saying, "No, I'm not. I'm ugly and I smell bad." And she ran out of the store. Don never saw her again. The suggestion that was at least partially true at one time in her life, having to do with her smell and perhaps her skin condition, but was now completely false, was so deeply embedded in her that she wasn't able to release it. She was free of the disease, but she wasn't free of the suggestion. The story of the girl was about being. And the first story that I mentioned about the man baby was about doing. And suggestions can affect our having as well. And this is a story about having. In 2001, Marianne and I lived in Kansas City, Missouri, and one day a friend, her name was Bobby, asked if I would speak with her mother, who had been diagnosed with a serious illness, cancer, and it was late stage. I agreed. In our first conversation, Bobby's mother told me that she always knew she was going to have cancer. "How did you know that?" I asked her. "I was 7 years old when I knew, because all the females in my family die of cancer." "How do you know that?" "Because that's what my family talked about all the time. It was talked about at the dinner table, breakfast table. It was always talked about it. We talked about who had died, who was going to die, who was getting sick, who was in a real serious case. At seven, I knew what my future was going to be." The first visit I had with Bobby's mother occurred like this. Bobby and her aunt had held up the arms of her mother as they walked from the car into my office. And they would stop every few feet because Bobby's mother got winded. She was so exhausted, she could hardly walk. So she'd catch her breath, and then they'd walk a few more steps, catch her breath, walk a few more steps. She was basically being carried, and she was still exhausted. So during that call, when she told me these stories, and I taught her how to do the healing codes, in about a week, I got the urge, I thought I ought to call her back and see how she was doing. So I called a phone number, and a young woman answered the phone, and I said, "Bobby, this is Tom Costello. I'm calling to check on your mother." And the woman said, "This isn't Bobby, this is her mother." I was shocked. What are you doing? She said, I'm upstairs vacuuming the guest bedroom. We had guests, they left, but I have some more family coming to town, so that's what I'm doing. I feel great." When she went to the next doctor's visit, the nurse looked at her and said, "What are you doing? You look great. Whatever you're doing, keep it up. Okay, come on into the room now and we'll start your chemo." 6 months later, she was dead. She was survived by 2 daughters and 4 granddaughters. And about 4 years ago, a friend from Kansas City sent me an email. Bobby had advanced stage cancer herself. We get a lot of suggestions from our parents, some good, some not so good. We get a lot of suggestions from our teachers, and I have news for you. Every one of us is a teacher. We teach ourselves. We teach our parents. We teach our spouses, our children, friends, co-workers. We even teach our teachers. A few weeks ago, Marianne and I were flying to New York to see a family member who needed encouragement and support. And the Southwest Airlines magazine had a story about a soldier with three sons. And the soldier, a Lieutenant Colonel Weber, had been diagnosed with late-stage disease, and his death was inevitable. And this guy, realizing that he wasn't going to be around to make suggestions, train people, train his children, give them the wisdom that he may have acquired over the course of lives, he decided to write a book for his children of what he would say, the suggestions he would like to impart to them in life that they would get even after he was gone. The book title is Tell My Sons by Mark Weber. His approach to his children is even more valuable, I think, than other approaches that have been popularized in the last 20 or 30 years. And you might be familiar with this idea. In some goal-setting and self-improvement circles, the idea that, you know, sit down and you can dramatically change your life and the way you do things if you will sit down and write your epitaph. What's going to appear on your headstone over your by your grave? And while you're at it, write your obituary. The idea is that, thinking this, and we go, in order to write a good obituary saying kind things about us, we might have to improve the way we do things. We might have to change how we live our lives. We might, sitting here parked on the side of the road is not, that's not what I want. I need to accomplish something. I need to contribute something. I need to fill in the blank. Now, I do think that that approach can help us. It can improve our legacy by helping us be inspired enough to change our behaviors. However, I think this idea that Mark Weber is onto, writing a story about what was suggested to you and what you wish had been suggested to you, what you suggested to other people, maybe siblings, spouses, children, friends, and what you wish you had suggested to them, has a greater potential to help us to heal. Think of that. We have suggested to us and to others. It's like, do over. And if we can document that, now all of a sudden we put our attention on something that we would love to be able to shift and heal. As I was thinking about this topic, I have a suggestion for you. I asked myself, what's a suggestion? Usually I'll look up a word in free dictionary, thefreedictionary.com, but I didn't. I just thought about it, and I thought, you know what? I think a suggestion is an idea or a thought form or a consciousness form that is seeking to grow into physical manifestation. They come from the consciousness of the thinker. They can be directed at ourselves, or we can direct them at other people. I think most often these suggestions are from us, about us, from us, to us, and then some portion of the time to other people. Suggestions are causative. They're causative in that they change the physiology. They change our emotions. They change the way we think. And they do the same thing. They change the physiology, the emotions, and the thinking of the target. So if we're the target, we're going to be changed by the suggestions that are arising from our consciousness. Suggestions arise from the soil of our consciousness, ours and other people. Whoever's doing the thinking, that's where these suggestions are coming from. I had this vision, thinking of soil of consciousness. This is kind of like newly emerging plants that push through the soil. If you've ever grown anything, you know, you plant a seed, and then at some point, pops up through the soil, this little green thing, and you go, ah. Now, what pops through the soil can grow and be nourishing and valuable. We're familiar with that as a concept. Or they can be like weeds, draining energy from the things we do want to be able to grow stronger and come into physical manifestation. So if weeds pop up, they're draining energy that could otherwise be used more productively by something else. I consider suggestions to be either alive or almost alive in the process of becoming alive. I can recall reading something years ago about ideas, and in one of the, I guess it was a series of three or four people having some sort of conversation, and I read this: of course ideas are not alive. And I went, wait a minute, is that true? Are ideas alive or not alive? This guy, of course they're not alive. I thought, and I've started to think about that ever since, and that maybe 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. I said to Marianne right after I read that, you know, I don't agree with this guy. I think he failed to consider this. He just assumed that that was true because it couldn't figure out if a heartbeat and the pulse, and it couldn't fog a mirror. But how do they pass from one person to the next? How do they circulate around the globe? How do these ideas get transmitted if they're not alive? They're not like rocks that we throw. I think they're alive, or maybe becoming alive. That would mean that a suggestion could act in our bodies, minds, beneficially, like a vitamin, or it could act harmfully, like an infectious bacteria or parasite. Nutritious food or toxic substance. That's a big difference. And it all depends on what we put our attention on. Doesn't it seem like our minds and hearts are kind of like farm fields? Marianne and I are back this weekend in our hometown. And when we were growing up, this was big farm territory. Now it's big farm territory, vineyard territory on Long Island. And even though neither of us were farmers, our families weren't farmers, but we had and knew people who were farmers. It seems like our minds and hearts are like farm fields, with all kinds of suggestions popping up through the surface every time we think of something. Think of that. Doesn't it seem like that's true of you? Dinner tonight. I'm waiting a few seconds to give the suggestions enough time to pop up and try to get your attention, so you could decide what to add energy to and make them physical realities. So when I said that, dinner tonight, and if you put your attention on that, because you heard me say those two words, all of a sudden, suggestions are going to start to come to you. And they're trying to get your attention so you add energy to them so they can become physically manifested. They want to be born and come into physical reality. Walking. Creating value so value would come back to you. Your health. Your beauty. Deservingness. Did you notice how this works? Can you hear, or can you see, or can you feel, Or can you know the suggestions that jumped out of your consciousness in response to what your attention just went to? I could say this. I want to create a framework or a filter to illustrate another idea. You've already heard me talk about the scale of emotional states. It's a handy way of identifying our own emotional states at any one moment, and when we're dealing with other people, to be able to identify their emotional states. Starting from the bottom, going to the top, lower vibration to higher vibration, they would be shame, apathy, grief, fear, lust, anger, pride, courageousness, acceptance, peace. You could think of these things as filters or energy fields or clouds that we can stand in and then move to another, ideally move to a higher one, ideally, but sometimes we get stuck in them. If we step into the energy of fear and then put our attention on the following, see if you can notice what you notice. I'm going to do it fast because I don't want you to really dwell on this. So imagine fear, dinner tonight, being afraid, fear, walking, fear, creating value so value comes back to you, fear about your health, fear, your beauty, and fear, your deservingness. The suggestions that pop up come out of your consciousness, and there'll be a certain vibration because we're standing in this cloud of, in this demonstration, this as an illustration, of fear. And it's going to impact our body in certain negative ways. Let's try it differently now. Let's try a different emotional state. Let's use courageousness. Courageousness is a very high vibration. It's enthusiastic. And I describe it like this. Courageousness is that little girl, little boy in us. The one that's eager to please, that wants to have fun, wants to be playful, wants to discover stuff, wants to be helpful, and is all filled with the excitement and thrill of discovery and learning and life. Now, from a place of excitement, enthusiasm, and discovery of something new, notice what arises for you. If you were an excited child, dinner tonight, walking, creating value, your health, your beauty, deservingness. Did you notice anything? Did you notice this possibly? That beautiful suggestions were competing, almost like the farm lot that I was referring to a little while ago. These beautiful flowers are trying to break through the surface, but they may be competing with weeds that are trying to strangle them, choke them off. You know, who's going to get the energy trying to compete? Depending on our past experiences, we're going to have more or less energy suggestions in our inventory that speaks about each of these items. Dinner, walking, value, health, beauty, deservingness. We can choose how this works. We can choose what to focus on. You often hear me talk about the idea that awareness is the ultimate goal. If we are more aware, and you're going to be able to hear this again, because when I finish this talk, I'm going to read the prayer from letter 8 of Christ Returns. Listen to this from the standpoint of awareness and suggestions. So if you notice that when you think about something from a place of fear, or you think about something from a place of courageousness, that there is a different frequency, there's a different vibration to the suggestions that pop into mind, then you're already becoming aware, you're already becoming more mindful about this, competition that's going on for your attention. You know, feed me, feed me, feed me. Like birds in the nest, or weeds and flowers in the garden that are competing for which should I water? Which would I fertilize? The weeds or the flowers? The weeds or the flowers? The answer is obvious to us. What we want to be doing and what is long-term better for us to be doing, but habitually we may be doing something else. Okay, here is my suggestion to you and to myself. Since we are driving a vehicle in life, our body, that has a mind and a heart and all kinds of internal organs, body parts, we will want to notice the suggestions being whispered to us or yelled at us as we move through life. If the whispers or the yells aren't based on love or kindness, respect, possibility, hope, fun, laughter, the suggestions are lies, and they probably originated due to misunderstanding or confusion in us or in somebody else with a lower level of awareness. Somebody who just didn't understand. They didn't understand how life works and what they could be doing. A thought just came to mind. I was on the plane the other day, and sitting across from us in a different row was a woman and an 11-month-old baby. And this baby was unbelievably alert. I was really, really impressed. But I could hear that the woman was said this three times that I heard. Well, she's easy to travel with now, but just wait. It'll be harder. It'll be harder to travel with her later. It'll be harder to travel with her later. It will be harder to travel later. And all the time, she has this infant in her arms. It's like, lady, you don't want to be making that suggestion to that baby. That baby is getting your suggestion about how easy or fun or hard or difficult or stressful travel is. And I could tell the way she said it. She had said it one time, and it must have acquired some energy from somebody else. Oh, yeah, I certainly understand that. And now, it was just a habit pattern. It was like a tape playing. She wasn't actually thinking of that in a new unit of time. She was just repeating something that she had repeated once before, or twice before, or five times before, all the time, suggesting it to her, not only herself, but even more importantly, to that baby. So the suggestion is this. Learn to be able to know when a suggestion arises from your consciousness and whether it is good for you or bad for you. That's my suggestion. Love will direct your vehicle toward health and happiness. My suggestion that you will know how to do that. You will know how to go in that direction when you recognize you're being whispered to, or yelled at, or scolded, or encouraged, or loved, or diminished, or empowered, or helped, or hindered by the suggestions that arise from the soil of your consciousness because they've been placed there previously. You have the power to do the suggestions that will produce the kind of life that you want. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the prayer from letter 8 in Christ Returns. I've pluralized it so it applies to all of us. And it, in fact, becomes a suggestion, a series of suggestions to us about our relationship with divine consciousness. So now, you'll hear this and go, this is a good suggestion. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know that you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.